Hello everybody and welcome back to Turncloaks, the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Actual Play podcast presented by Encounter Roleplay. My name is Will, I'm a D&D sex icon and I'll be your Dungeon Master for tonight as we return to the world of Penumbra. We have our full cast and crew back with us today, so let's go round, figure out who we are and who we are playing. And let's start today with Joseph. How are you doing, Joseph?
Oh, just lovely. Ready for another interesting adventure as we record more episodes of Turncloaks. But yeah, good day overall, so I'd say I'm ready to go.
Excellent, excellent. Talk to us a little bit about Tamron.
Yeah, human ranger of the group. He's got shaggy hair, always wearing a headscarf with his rabbit foot at his belt, and his trusty companion Ari by his side.
Awesome. Speaking of which, we have Sydney with us tonight. How are you doing, Sydney?
I am great. I'm so ready to get back into this. I'm ready to cry. I'm ready to be broken. But yes, I am playing Ari, a half-elf rogue. She is pretty scrawny, has long, kind of stringy blonde hair. She always carries like sketchy daggers on her thigh and hips, and has a short sword now, finally.
Awesome. We also have Josh with us tonight. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm good. It is currently snowing here in England, so I am taking shelter inside for warmth and comfort, and then I found out we're recording Turncloaks, and there will be no warmth and comfort tonight. It will be misery and despair, which is what I'm looking forward to. I will be playing Luna. He's a human acolyte. He's a monk of the Shadow Discipline, and he is sort of the elderly cripple of the group who... He did something last episode. He's currently standing there. We're going to get to that in a minute, but I you'd think I'd have had time to figure out what I was going to say, but I have no idea what I'm about to do.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Tool School with us tonight.
I am excited and scared. There's a lot going on. Alistair is facing a lot as we enter into this whole new situation. As I said, I'm playing Alistair Crow. He is also known as the White Crow. He is a plague doctor, which in our low magic world is our version of a cleric of the grave domain. He is a wood elf, and yeah, we're going to get into that as well.
Incredible, incredible. Well, I'll do a quick recap of what happened last episode. Of course, the party find themselves in the city of Ostwald after having a conversation with Jasper Wick, a local crime lord who runs a gang known as the Barksdale Boys. He also runs The Game, which is gambling on members of the 100 who may die next. And he told them in order to win his trust that they should deliver some unmarked crates to four locations within the city. Those four locations were the household of one Mariana Shermer, one of the Emperor's hospitals, one of the temples of the Emperor, and lastly, the Camperon household. Now, as the party traveled through the city, they went to Mariana Shermer's household first. A child opened the door to Luna whilst Ori and Tamron stayed back and asked if that was the medicine for her mummy. Now, the party have all had all sorts of crazy theories as to what's going on, but we're going to find out, perhaps, a little bit more tonight about what's going on. So, let us pick up from exactly where we left off. At the household of Mariana Shermer, and Tamron and Ori are behind the gate. Luna has gone up, opened the door, a little child, she's opened the door, and asked if that is the medicine for her mother. Tamron, Ori... You watch this happen, and you can hear the child as well.
Tam, hearing this, immediately just walks up to the crate, takes out his short sword and jams it into the lid, and begins to pry it open.
Yes.
Oh my god. Ari. Oh my god. Okay. Ari will... try to stop you. I don't know if she can. She's not that strong, but she'll probably like jump on your back like a spider monkey and be like, oh my god. And be like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Ari, I need to know if what's in here is the black vials.
We can't do that. We're going to put ourselves in so much more danger. Stop.
the little child, she's looking very confused at this. She said, Can I take it inside?
No. Don't let them take it inside.
Tam, are you determined to open this up? If we want, we can turn to rolls. Ori wants to try and like truly grapple you down.
Yeah, I'll try. I don't think it's going to go very well, but I will try.
Let's have an opposed athletics check as Ori tries to grapple Tamron to stop him.
Three.
All right. Three from Ori.
14.
14 right. From Tamron. So Tamron, you can kind of throw her off and put your sword to open up the one of the crates. You look inside and you see rows upon rows of black vials.
Tam reaches in and just picks one up cautiously, almost as if it's about to explode at any moment. And then as this idea forms in his head, he quickly pockets the vial. And based on his knowledge of the address of where where the Camperon householded, he immediately starts off in that direction.
Okay.
Ari will have sort of a moment where she gets up and dusts herself off and like looks into the crate and realizes what it is, and she's just like, "Oh my god," and looks over and sort of realizes where Tamron is going and just takes off after him.
All right. Back with Luna and the child at the door, the child will say to you, Luna, "Can I take it inside?"
Luna... Oh, crap. He takes the box and just says, how long has your mother been sick?
She kind of like, you know, furrows her brow thinking, "Not very long. But she needs her medicine."
I know. I'm really sorry, child, but this is actually going somewhere else. I'm very embarrassed. I didn't realize I'm new to town, and I'll go back and I'll find out where your crate has gone. This is something. This isn't medicine. Go back inside, just see to your mother." And
she looks upset. She's like, "Well, bring my mummy's medicine."
"I know, I'm sorry. I'll see to it as soon as I can, I promise." And he turns and he kind of walk back, and I presume they've already gone by the time he comes back.
Yeah, that they have. So let's follow Tamron and Ori. Tam, you are storming off towards the Camperon household.
Yeah, Tam doesn't even have words at this point. He's frightened by the fact that someone wants his family dead for whatever reason. And it's just, livid, storming off to the house.
Nice. So you head that way, and Ori, you're kind of falling behind him. And the two of you arrive probably about half an hour later at a quick pace towards the Camperon household. Now, it's in the same area of town, so it's not that far away. And you see outside this pretty large estate, actually. Not as large as Mariana Sherma's, but it clearly has wings to this house, which can tell you how large this place would be. And outside there is a notice board. And the notice board reads that the Camperon household are responsible for the wells of the city, and anyone who is wishing for water should not knock here and should instead go to their offices elsewhere in town. This is their private estate. So it's basically, if you're here for water, don't come to us. Gotcha. Go to our offices on the other side of town.
Tam, seeing the house, now realizing that he's possibly 100 feet or so away from his surviving family, begins to walk up the path much more slowly at this point, now that he's kind of at the precipice of finding out if his family's here or not.
Yeah. Ari will come up behind him and just say, Tam, don't take this the wrong way, but you don't have to do this right now. We can just turn around and go back and continue on the mission that we were originally on and stay out of any trouble with that.
Ari, this is my family, and someone wants them dead. If that's really true, then I have to warn them, and they have to leave. I can't lose anyone else.
Well, Tamron, you hardly even had them. At this point, doing this could get us in so much trouble with this gang that we might all lose each other. I'm not going to stop you, but I just want you to be aware that we might be facing something worse afterwards.
We don't need to stay in the city that long after. We find the girl, do what we have to do, and then we leave. But I have to do this. And he turns and knocks on the door.
A few moments later, the door opens up to the estate, and you see a man in his 50s, fairly well dressed, pencil thin moustache, and the air of wealth around him. Open the door. He says, "Yes, can I help you? If you're a well wisher, as we call them, then please, you should read the notice board. There is no water here for you, wastrel."
"No, I don't wish for water. I'm simply wondering if the family was in."
"Well, yes, the family are in. An old friend, you say. What name should I give?"
"Rysik. Tamarin Rysik."
Gives you a long look. "Wait here." Closes the door. And returns a few moments later along with your mother. And you see your mother, Seraphine, before you, who looks at you in astonishment.
With no reservations, Tam pushes past the man and tackles her in a hug.
Yeah, she starts crying. Tam! And, you know, she is just overcome with emotion as she hugs you back.
"I thought I'd lost you forever."
"I thought I lost you too."
Where's my sister?
She kind of calls upstairs through the tears, "Tiala, Tiala!" And a few minutes later, you see your sister running down the staircase towards you and looks at you in shock as well. "Tam?" And just the whole family embrace.
Oh my god.
The man is kind of just awkwardly on the sidelines, kind of watching this.
So is Ari.
So is Ari, yeah, kind of gives you a look as well. As the three of them just hug. There's probably like a 10 minutes of crying and hugging, and no words are spoken between them.
Oh, yeah. Tam finally takes a step back and understands that he has to explain to them what's going on. And at this point, he doesn't even know if they're aware of the fact that his father is dead. He doesn't even know if they know what happened to him. So he looks at them and says, is there some place that we could
let us
down and
come
talk?
In. There is, must come in and bring your friend as well. Or if
he,
yeah,
he turns back to Ari and just kind of like puts his hand out and motions for her to come in.
Yeah. She takes it and comes in sort of awkwardly. She's not very good at human interaction.
Roll me an insight check, Ori. And this household as well is, you know, it's very nice, you know, for peasants, and you came up in a, you know, little hut in the woods. This is wealth.
16.
Yeah, you notice Seraphine, like, look for a ring on your hand. She's like, friend? Wife? What's going on? You know, and, you know, not noticing one, she kind of, friend. And closes the door. You know, she's got a lot of catching up to do. And she's quite an insightful woman herself. So closes the door. The gentleman follows along with you into a living room. There's a fire on. There is, you know, a coffee table in the middle where there is drinks. And the furniture around is kind of nice chaise longues and armchairs and the like. So, you know, these are upholstered furniture, which is impressive. Not handmade wooden stuff. And she says, sit down, sit down. And the three of you kind of take the sofa next to one another. This is my friend, Dermish. And gentleman who met you at the door, pencil thin moustache, kind of nods to you and says, "That's nice to meet you, my good man." Not quite sure how to address you.
Tam gives him a nod and looks back to his mother and says, "And this is Ari. She helped me stay in the village after you left."
"Yes, well, thank you then, Ori. It's lovely to meet you all. I'm sorry, I prayed and prayed and never thought this day would come."
Neither did we, really. I've heard so much about you for so many years. It's great to meet you too."
"We have much catching up to do then."
"Yes. Why did you leave?"
"Well, she kind of looks down and kind of shoots a look towards Dermish for kind of, you know, strength, it seems. Well, you see, your father, Giano, he came to me that night and said that now would be the time. I knew ever since you were born that there may be a time that we would have to leave. He was in touch with the spirits of the woods, and his cause was higher than that of mother and child. I knew that he could save us. When we saw the black vials, we knew the time had come."
"And you don't know where he is now?"
"They bought us this place here. They paid for everything. And I had to leave my husband and my only son behind."
"Mother, he's gone."
She doesn't cry, but she kind of closes her eyes for a moment and kind of nods to herself and says, "I knew that would be the way. I made my peace of that some time ago. But you, I always hoped."
"I'm glad I could fulfill that. He died fighting the plague, and I have a friend who knew him in his final days. A brother. He died a noble death. And he won't be forgotten."
She kind of takes a moment. "A brother. Right, well, it is still a happy occasion. Your father and I, when we met, we were both magic users. There is a group of us, and there had been, who came to know that the plague may be coming. And we knew that it would destroy this world. And that is why, the only reason why, that could possibly tear me away from you is knowing that the murder of crows might be able to help us."
Tam looks at Ari as she mentions magic. And turns back to his mother and says, "Do you know what the plague feeds on? It is magic, Mother."
"I see."
"We learned that from the crows and from the creatures that have been roaming the woods, the plague hounds." And he reaches into his pocket and pulls out the black vial and sets it on the table.
She stares at that with dread. "I hoped I'd never have to see one of those again."
"If we'd done what we'd been told,
we would have been delivering a crate of them to you.
Her face drops completely. What? A crate of those? How can that... What? Why?
We came to the city not a day ago, and somehow got ourselves mixed up with the crime lord. He told us that we had to deliver crates of these vials across the city, and you were on that list.
She looks deeply concerned by this, as does Dermish. She says, but my work here with Dermish concerns the wells of the city. We make sure that they're clean. The only shipments of crates that we ever get are reagents to clean the water. Dermish here, he's an alchemist. And Dermish nods and says, well, yes, I make sure that the water supplies are clean for those here in the city, dear boy. We were expecting a delivery, but not from any crime lord. We don't get them from any crime lord. We get our supplies from the city, from the Alchemist's Guild.
So, what are you using, then, to clean the water? And can Ari do an insight check?
Yeah, go ahead.
On this boy. Ari says that. On this boy. 23.
Yeah, Dermish looks like he is honestly concerned, as does Seraphin. By this latest development. He says, well, it's cleaning herbs that cleanse the water. We never received any black vials. And Seraphin's on, yes, never anything like that. And she points to the black vial.
You said that there's a group of you magic users, then. Are you still together? Are you all in town?
She shakes her head and says, that group of us, we communicated rarely. We knew that we were... had to keep ourselves safe. Had to keep our children safe as well. We've lost almost all contact with them. Over the years, I rather think that some of them have gone missing rather mysteriously. As though someone is hunting us. That's why we lived in a little hut in the woods and we told you about spirits that would tell us things, Tam. We were trying to prepare you for when you were awakened.
Awakened? What do you mean when I learned to use magic?
Yes, sir. Young mage will experience an awakening often through great stress or trauma. It is a painful way, but us leaving you meant that you had to learn to survive.
I see.
And there was a deal with the crows, you see.
I know. My brother told me about it. What exactly did you get from that?
The knowledge that there would be a cure. Or at least those who could fight the plague.
But we don't know exactly what that is yet. We don't know who that is.
No, but your father's work. He was working on that. I'm sure that you and this brother and your friends, I have to believe that there will be a cure. But this, pointing towards the black vials, this is worrying news indeed. You say a crime lord?
Yes, his name is Jasper Wick, and he's been hiring people to distribute these throughout the city.
I see. Well, that is grave news indeed. Grave news indeed. Then perhaps these weren't intended for us. Perhaps these were intended for all of the city.
But that would turn everyone here into those creatures that they walk without flesh, without, as a unit, without a mind, just wandering, destroying everything.
Tamron, and Ari puts her hand like on your knee and says, they don't want your family dead. They want your family to poison the water. They want everyone dead.
Dan rocks back on the couch.
Who is they? This Jasper Wick, is he the one that's doing this? We should call the city guard. We should the Emperor's knights, Sir Wenson, he could help. I know he's not a good man, but if he knew what was going on, surely he could help.
Mother, I feel he's only a pawn. I think someone is... Someone's doing more than he is.
You said...
Sir Wenton.
Sir Wenton.
Well, they have knights, don't they? They kill bad people, and, well, I know that they haven't been exactly doing very good things around here, but if there's anyone that would do something like that, surely it would be them. I don't know. There is no guard force other than them. Who else is there to turn to? The mages I once knew are all dead. And it's you and your friends in Tamarin. I wouldn't want to see you get into a fight with anyone.
Mother, we were attacked by Sir Winton's forces at Arkenberry. He's no friend of ours. The only thing he wants is power. And I feel that he may be involved with these vials.
Oh, by the gods. It's all messed up, Tamarin. What do we do? And Dermish says, I am an alchemist. I can take a look at what's in those vials, and I have a laboratory here. Perhaps I can help in some way. And she, yes, dear Dermish, perhaps you can.
We need to do something to divert any suspicion towards us, though. We have a task that we need to complete. I'm worried that if we don't deliver these crates the way we're meant to do, then... We're going to get ourselves and you in a lot of trouble.
You're wrapped up with this crime lord, then? He has... You're in with a bad crowd.
We're trying to gain his trust so that we can gain some leverage and hopefully put an end to this. At least save this city. Because if it falls...
I know that I put you in great danger, and I always knew that this would be your fate, but... Putting you in danger would break my heart, and losing you again.
Well, then you have to let us complete this task. We're putting ourselves in danger by not doing it because they know we have these crates. They know that we're the only ones that are able to do this.
Dermish says, Seraphin, he's not a boy anymore. He's a man. And a man's work is sometimes to do... the hard things in life, not to take the easy road. We should do whatever he thinks is best. And he places a hand on her shoulder, and she takes the hand on her shoulder and kind of clasps it. Yes. You're right. What do you need us to do, Tam?
We'll deliver the rest of the crate. Keep it, study it, tell us what you can about it. But... make sure that no one knows. And for heaven's sake, don't let anyone take any of it or use it. If even a drop of this is put into the water supply, it could destroy any part of the city, if not the whole thing.
Of course. I will, we'll pretend that we put it in the water then, maybe.
Yes.
Yes.
However, it will be very clear that it's not working. If you lie to anyone, you should prepare to leave the city. I fear that whatever consequences come from this, they will be deadly.
Leaving again. Very well. And Dermish nods and says, I have some experience in... espionage. I know how these things go down. We'll make plans to leave, and if anyone strange comes knocking, is there any way we can reach you?
Yes. We'll be at a safe house next to the butcher's shop.
Your mother says, is it safe there?
I don't know for how much longer, but for now, yes. If we are not there, our friend... Alistair will be. He's the one who knew Dad.
She says I would very much like to get the chance to meet him if I could, but this comes before that.
We'll be visiting again with the rest of the crates. I just want to be sure you're safe. I don't know how much longer we can stay. I don't...
Me too. That's all I want for you. I'm so proud of you, Tamron.
He walks over and just collapses in his mother's arms. Finally able to feel this sense of vulnerability after what he's going through.
Your father would be so proud of you if he could see you now.
I just hope I can live up to his legacy. And yours.
And you'll notice that Tiala is kind of off to one side, not quite as into this, I suppose. I mean, the initial reaction was overwhelming emotion, but this conversation with your mother and Dermish and yourself, she seems a little bit uneasy with. You guys can roll me an insight check.
17.
11.
You both sense that she's uncomfortable with... In particular, when Dermish puts his hand on her mother's shoulder and Seraphine takes the hand as well, she seems, like, uncomfortable with that.
Mm.
And your mother says, very well, then it's best you be off, then.
We'll return shortly. And he looks at Tiala and run and goes to her and embraces her as well.
Yes, she gives you a big hug as well. And she whispers in your ear as she kind of hugs you. And she says, the Tanner's shop tonight down the road.
Tam, when he falls back, he gives kind of a confused look and then just nods.
And your mother gives you another big hug and gives Ori a big hug as well. Right, well... we'll be seeing you soon, then.
Yes, Mother, absolutely. And he reluctantly turns and goes to the door and just...
Send your brother my love.
I will. He gives her a smile over his shoulder as he walks outside.
And Ari follows.
They close the door behind you as you leave.
Tam just starts... Not weeping, but tears are definitely coming down his face as he's just overwhelmed with the relief of knowing that his family is alive and that they're not immediately wanted, but definitely concerned about what's going to happen.
Ari will turn to Tamron and sort of put her hands on his face and wipe the tears away from his cheeks and say, how do you feel?
Like there's hope. For the first time in a long time. We have to go complete our task.
You're right. But we can be happy in the moment.
Little happiness is definitely welcome.
He sort of takes her by the arm and just kind of walks with her down the path through the streets, back to the safe house, ? Is that where we want to go? Just to kind of rendezvous?
So we could meet back with Luna on the road with the wagon if you want, because he's going to be going slower, and do the other deliveries, first of all, or you could head back to the safe house straight away.
Okay, yeah. I just didn't know if we'd be able to find him, but absolutely, let's go
to Luna. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, I think Luna has a pretty good idea of where you would have gone. And while she's slower, he has the address as well. So you can meet him back up on the road. Luna, you'll see that Tam's eyes are kind of red and puffy from crying.
So Luna just sort of sees them coming, and Luna hasn't moved. Luna is exactly where you left him, slumped on the floor next to all these crates. He has covered up the crate that you left open when you guys moved off down the street. But he is holding one of these vials in his hand, sort of shielding it from anyone so no one could see. He's on a break. He's on like a long delivery driver break, but he's slumped against sort of like the pillar right by the gate that leads back up to the house, and has basically spent the last God knows how long, wouldn't be able to tell you how long it's been, wrestling with what they do now. But he sees you guys coming and finally pulls himself to his feet.
Ari will come over and notice that we have the same amount of crates that we started with. And she's like, I thought we just delivered this one.
I can't do it.
Why?
If that crate, if these vials, if someone is doing it to take away someone's mother, I have absolutely no idea where my daughter is right now. And I have no idea what she's going through. But I know in my heart that she knows that I am doing everything I can to find my way back to her. I can't stomach the idea of taking someone else's mother away from them.
This runs a lot deeper than you think, and we can explain it later, but I think it's quite obvious that if we just abandon this, then we're never going to see anyone again. We're already mixed up in this. We've agreed to deliver these, and if we don't, the most dangerous gang in this entire city is going to be after us, and we won't survive the night.
Ari's right. We have to play a game. We have to lie to them, and it will be dangerous. But if they think we've done what they asked us to do, we might be able to make this work.
Luda just sort of, you know those laughs that aren't funny? He just sort of snorts, rubbing his temple, and just says, I've gone through 1,001 ideas of what I could give her instead. How we could fake these vials. I don't know, berries or something, crush them in water. But I can't do it. And I can't bring myself to walk up to that little girl and ask her to carry these things to her mother.
We can't tell her the truth. She's too young to understand. But if we can make up some kind of...
If we make anything up, it'll be reported. She'll ask where the medicine's coming. They'll have a servant send out, asking why the shipment never arrived.
Well then, why don't we ask for an audience with her mother?
Would you let people like us into your home?
Maybe if I was six.
Luna painfully remembers something, and nods and says, well, I suppose you get used to seeing someone, delivery people bringing medicine. Maybe she wouldn't question it. But I can't deliver this. I know it's stupid, and I know that it doesn't serve the greater cause, but I looked her right in the eyes. She thinks we're helping her mother. I can't let another little girl down. And I can't be the cause of another little girl growing up without her mother.
You stay here then. And Ari will take a crate and take it up to the door.
Okay.
And knock again.
The same little girl opens the door and says, oh, is that my mummy's medicine?
Ari will sort of kneel down to her and say, sort of. It's a little bit different. I think I might need to speak with your mummy to maybe tell her how she's supposed to use this medicine. It's a new one.
She's not allowed to see anyone right now.
Why's that?
The doctor said.
Oh, is her doctor here?
No, but he said.
Well, and she sort of smiles and gets down a little bit closer and she says, well, it can be our secret, and I won't tell if you don't, and I'm sure your mommy might want some company. It could be fun.
Roll me a persuasion check.
Okay. 17.
She looks around to see if anyone's listening. She's like, well, okay, I suppose you can come in for a moment.
Perfect.
She lets you inside. And lets you into this, you know, very nice house indeed. There are servants around. There is a door nearby, which she says, my mummy's in there.
All right. Well, I'll just go speak with her for a moment and I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Are the rest of us following in or are we just kind of staying back?
Yeah, I think you guys are staying back, yeah.
Yeah, I'm outside.
Okay. So you open the door and you are let into a bedchamber, which smells really strongly of like incense and herbs, to cover the smell of sickness, which is pretty, cloying and heavy in the room. And there's a woman in her 30s or so, who is sweating profusely on the bed and, you know, deep within her covers.
Mm-hmm. So does she look like she has the plague or she has open wounds or like, is it, do I recognize the sickness?
You can't see any open wounds. She's, you know, under the covers, which would hide anything that was on her. She looks like she has a fever.
Okay. Ari will come over to her and say, hello, miss?
Raspy breath. Who are you?
My name is Ari. I was sent here to deliver something to you.
The medicine? Yes.
Yes, the medicine. And Ari will sort of pop it open and take one of the vials out and show it to her and say, is this your medicine?
She kind of like turns her head to look at it, which is quite an excruciating process for her. She says, yes, must be.
So you have been taking this for some time now then?
She like slowly shakes her head weakly and says, medicine is needed. I need to take the medicine. The doctor ordered.
Miss, who is your doctor?
She says, Dr. Bowman.
Okay. Well, I want to warn you, what's in these vials is something I've encountered before, and it's not going to heal you.
What?
This is a very, very dangerous substance. I'm not even exactly sure what it does, and I'm not sure why you've been someone that needed a giant crate of it. What is it that you do?
She kind of breathes heavily. I need medicine because I'm sick. I distribute grain. Bread. Now, give me the medicine, please. Dr. Bowman is a very good doctor.
Ari gets, like, very close to her so she can stop, like, trying to turn her head and put herself in pain. And she says, Miss, I know it's going to be very difficult for you to trust me. I'm not your doctor and I'm not someone that you know. But I have been told to deliver these crates of these black vials to prominent people in the city that distribute food and water and things of that nature. And these vials will ruin everyone and everything. Everyone will be sick. It's not medicine for you. It's not medicine for anyone. It's a poison.
Roll me a persuasion check.
Okay.
Please roll well.
Nat one!
Oh, no!
Oh my god!
That is not good for you.
Shit!
She... Yeah. She just kind of gets this look over her face and says, "You are delivery girl. Now leave the crates and leave the medicine to Dr. Bowman. Get out of here. Now."
She says, "Yes, ma'am." And goes,
"And remember, I know your name, Ori. So, please just leave the crates."
"Why do you want them?"
"Outside my door. Give them to a servant."
"Fine. Just, if you care about your child at all, don't let her get into this. At least protect her if you don't want to protect yourself."
"Don't lecture me, woman. Get out of my house."
She takes the crates out.
All right.
And shuts the door behind her.
All right. Your turn outside.
Yep. She takes it and leaves it out by the door. And she goes over to the little girl and says, "Now, remember, this is mommy's medicine, and so it's not meant for you. So make sure that you do not get into this, okay?"
"Okay."
"You promise me?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, because it's very strong and it would hurt someone so small."
"Okay."
"All right." And she walks out.
"We have done everything wrong. We've done it all wrong. We are in so much trouble. Fuck."
All right. So next on the delivery list is the hospital.
Oh my God.
Oh God. It gets worse.
That's shitty.
Are we headed there next?
How was that time with your family, Tam?
Sorry for my nat one. It literally ruined everything. Like, ruins the whole game.
We go looking for the doctor.
Guess we go to the hospital.
Yeah. So
he might be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Ari will come out and sort of relay what just happened to you guys and say, "I tried to warn her and she wouldn't believe me. There was nothing I could do other than make sure that her child didn't get into it. But she is one who distributes grains. So these vials are not meant for her either. These are all just poison. They're going to destroy the whole town. And the person who's implementing this is someone named Dr. Bowman. That's her doctor. And we're supposed to go to the hospital."
Luna takes off towards the hospital, marching with purpose.
"If we can find him there, we can question him about who is telling him to do this. But regardless, this is planned out with incredible strategy. They're taking what people need, food, water, health, and faith, and twisting it to be what will ultimately destroy them."
"Maybe we should get Alistair. Maybe this woman is delusional from fever and he could heal her and then she could understand. We've already stopped your parents, we've already stopped your mother from poisoning the water, and if we can stop her from poisoning the grains, maybe there's someone we can get to."
"We may be able to bring him back later, but at this point the only one in danger is her. She's wholly convinced that this is her medicine and that it will cure her."
"What do you mean, the water?"
"My family has established themselves as the caretakers of the wells of this city. These vials were not meant for them, but for them to put into the water. They're not just after the people in the hospitals, those who go to the temple, or these two households. They want to bring the whole city to its knees."
"We need to find this doctor. And we need to have words with him."
Tam nods and walks along with him in the direction of the hospital.
When arriving at the hospital, you see that it is a series of large bunkhouses that have been kind of built together, essentially. Built of stone, and quite lasting. So this thing is clearly quite an old structure. And you see that there are people walking in and out of the hospital at any given time. And there is a waiting room. And if you were to walk inside, you'll see that there is a, basically a secretary receptionist at that who calls out people's names to go in to see various different doctors and to go into various different wings of the hospital.
Luna strides up straight to the reception desk. Mm-hmm. To get the receptionist attention.
Yeah, she kind of looks at you and says, yes?
We need to speak to Dr. Bowman.
Dr. Bowman, do you have an appointment? She looks at a list.
We are here to deliver something. We have been instructed that it is for his eyes only.
She gives a knowing nod and says, oh, I see, very well. Then she kind of opens up the bar door, basically, to let you through into a door behind the desk. Come on through.
Luna marches forward, sort of confident.
Mm-hmm. Lauren and Tam following along?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're carrying one of the crates
in. Carrying the crates inside as well, yeah. She said, Dr. Bowman gave me special instruction to let you through. And you're walking down these kind of side passages. This is just where staff walk. So there aren't any patients down here. And you're walking down one of these wings to an office door. And on the door it reads, Dr. Bowman.
What was your name? Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Oh, my name, Lena.
Lena. I just curious, but has Dr. Bowman mentioned the nature of this delivery to you?
She shakes her head. He just said that it's of utmost importance. He does a lot of research here.
In which case, it's probably best that you wait outside. You understand.
She nods and says, yes, I wouldn't want to disturb Dr. Bowman.
All right, well, thank you for escorting us here, and we will see you on our way out.
She smiles, nods, turns, and leaves.
Ari looks over at Luna and Tam immediately and says, remember, this man is not one who's on our side. We cannot tell him that we opened these. We cannot tell him that we know.
And that's as far as you get, because suddenly all of the noise surrounding Luna vanishes. As he imagines, basically remembers the sound that his daughter made when she realized that her mother had passed away, and that scream, and remembers, just thinks through what that little girl is going to go through when she loses her mother to this, and he casts silence around himself and kicks the fucking door in.
I'm going to kill you.
Anyone going to try and stop Luna?
Yes.
All right. Tam, are you stopping Luna at all? Because you won't get a chance to see him do this.
Oh, boy. Is the door just kicked in at this point?
Well, he's going, you see him, everything goes silent and he turns to, like, kick down the door.
So I feel like at this point we recognize Luna's, we recognize when the stupid wheels are turning, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
And I see the stupid wheels turning.
All right. If you want to stop him, we can do opposed athletics.
Yes. And since me and Tam both doing it?
Yeah, you both get a roll. And
do you just want to take advantage on that?
Sure. Yeah, you can be assisting. Ori a roll as Tam takes the assist to give Ori advantage.
Oh my god, I have terrible athletics. This is not going to work. And so it's a 14.
So a 14 from Ori and a 6 from Luna. So everything goes silent and you just tackle Luna down to the ground. And Tam, you're kind of on top of him as well. You're kind of wrestling him down to the ground.
Okay.
You can see Luna is screaming. There's no sound.
No sound, but silent screams.
So are people looking?
There are gonna shortly be people that probably look, but it is silent, so.
Yeah. Ari just starts panicking and says, he's fainted! Can someone get a doctor?
Well, it's silent.
There's no sound.
No one can hear me?
No one can hear.
No
one can hear.
There is silence
anything.
For 30 feet.
Silence in the 30 foot cone. So Luna is screaming, Jesus. But there's no sound, and you're like shouting, can you get me a doctor? But no one is listening, because no one can hear.
So people aren't doing anything?
Currently, no. I mean, these people are going to places and it's a long corridor. They will probably shortly notice that something's going on there, but I haven't heard a tussle within 3 seconds here, yeah.
Oh my...
Oh, God.
Can Tam Ari... Yeah.
Motions just gently, like, to the crate, points at the door, and then just kind of makes a knocking motion to, like, try and communicate. We have to do this gently.
Yeah, Ari will sort of, like, pick up Luna by the shoulders as he's, like, on the ground, kind of, and, like, motion to Tamron to maybe, like, drag him out, kind of, like, pointing towards the hallway.
To take Luna out of the hospital. Gotcha. All right, he takes him from you.
Ari, can I knock on the door? Does that...
Drag him down the hallway far enough so that this is not affecting you.
As it will only last for a short while, and then he just goes slack, loses... All that adrenaline just suddenly ebbs, and the sound sort of suddenly returns.
Mm-hmm.
And
once that happens, Tam helps to, like, prop you up so that you can just kind of stand for a minute. Just regain yourself.
Yeah, Ari will just knock on the door then by herself.
You hear a voice from inside. It's kind of pane of kind of misted over glass. And you hear a voice from inside. Come in.
She opens the door and brings the crate with her. And she looks perfectly pleasant.
Yeah. As you walk into the office, there's a desk in front of you. Bunch of, you know, papers all over it. Very neatly stacked. And well-ordered bookshelves behind as well. This is clearly like a private office. Sitting at the desk, quill in hand, there is Dr. Bowman, presumably, who's wearing a neat surgeon's outfit, which looks completely, perfectly, you know, pristinely ironed and done up properly. He has a look of someone who's probably in his 50s, and quite a craggy face as well. His eyes are a dark green, and he has a crooked nose, which lends him quite a menacing look to him, as he has reading glasses on his nose from which he looks up at you from. What can I help you with?
I have a delivery for you.
He looks over towards the crate. Mm-hmm. Put it down.
She puts it down and she's like, this is from Mr. Wick. It's supposed to be of great importance. I'm not exactly sure what it's for. He implied that it was something very scary. And she's acting very, like, ditzy and...
Yeah, he smiles and says, did he now? Interesting.
But, anyway, I guess I better go back to him then.
What is your name, girl?
My name's Ari.
Ari. Takes his quill and writes down the name. Interesting. Is there anyone else with you here, Ari?
There were.
And their names?
Charles.
Charles. Writes down a name. Yeah, and anyone else?
Tam.
Tam. That must be short for something, I don't know. Tamarin, perhaps.
So I guess it's time for me to leave, then.
Oh, quite the opposite, Ori. It's time for you to sit down and answer some questions for me. And that is where we're going to wrap up tonight's episode of Turncloaks.
Josh, you shut the fuck up. Honestly.
I wanted to...
Josh, like, I feel like in every episode I've had to do some stupid shit to cover your stupid shit, and then we almost died.
Oh dear, my friends. That is... Well, we're going to wrap up tonight's episode of Turncloaks. Unfortunately for these guys, you have to tune in next week to see what happens to our party next. Let's go around the cast and crew. What do you think of tonight's episode? Where can we find you guys online? And of course, we're going to read out one of the wonderful 5-star reviews that you guys have been leaving us on iTunes. So let's start with Torsquill, who has been not so present in tonight's episode, just listening.
I am so glad that I did not have to make any decisions tonight. It was wonderful. Wow, there's a whole lot of intrigue, and how the heck are we going to get out of this? And yay, Alistair's didn't have to, he's going to have to play cleanup, I bet. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, I'm Tall Squall. You can find me all over the internet at Tall Squall on social medias. If you go to my Twitter, there's links to all the other things that I do right there. So please stop on by. Let me know you found me through Turncloaks. And I'm going to turn it over to the rest of these guys who, whew, good luck, guys.
All right, let's go to Sydney.
Hey. I'm super frustrated. Like, I want to bang my head against a wall. You can find me everywhere at Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, at Sydneyak. I'm also on Encounter Roleplay at doing things. And I also am the Dungeon Master for WonderQuest, which you can follow on Twitter at WonderQuestPod. And I'm on the D&D channel on Saturdays.
Joseph.
Oh, my goodness. Yikes, we've been to the highest of highs and lowest of lows in this episode, so we are just living up to our Turncloaks reputation, I suppose. But anyways, you can find me at Joseph Is Not Fast on Twitter.
Great stuff. And last but not least, Josh.
Yeah, wow. It's... Yeah, I don't have a lot of confidence in the city making it through this one. I feel like the city might probably all die, which is... Hey, it'll only be one in several other cities that have already died, and probably one of many, many more that will die. So, looking forward to being mixed up in that. Yay! You can find me on Encounter Roleplay, doing Encounter Roleplay things. And, yeah.
Excellent. Let's go here. Alright, so we're going to read out one of the 5-star reviews from you guys here on the iTunes. Let's see, this one is from Jack O'Buddy. Title is The Best of D&D. I've been following this podcast from the very beginning, and from the first 10 minutes of the first episode, I was absolutely hooked. Will, the DM, is a true storyteller, weaving a dark and detailed world that comes to life in a listener's mind. The 4 members of the party are some of the best D&D players out there, playing their characters sometimes literally to the point of tears. Every member of the cast is passionate about the story, and each brings a new aspect to the tale, rather than just playing out what the DM has planned. I cannot wait to continue listening to the fantastic podcast, and I hope it never ends. Well, thank you so much, Jacko Buddy, for that wonderful review. It warms our cold, dead hearts to read the reviews from you guys on iTunes. Of course, drop one for us on iTunes or on Stitcher or wherever else you can leave reviews these days, and we'll read them out on the show. But until next week, my friends, try not to roll too many net ones, because we'll be here laughing when you do. Good night, everybody!
Good night.